Welcome to Plans Are Booked, a podcast for every reader. I'm Molly Geller.
I'm Stephanie Blackburn.
And I'm Caitlin Madison. Steph might croak throughout this episode a little bit. She's got the Phoebe Buffay sexy voice. It's fine.
I was literally going to say that I was singing in the car on the way home and having the complete opposite of a Phoebe Buffay. I sounded horrible and my voice kept cutting out like mid note.
That's my favorite, when you go to hit like a high Adele note and all of a sudden it's just air and you're like, oh boy.
The best part of that classic Friends episode is when Phoebe is running around Central Perk licking everyone's coffee cups trying to keep the germs.
Listen, she had something going. I get it. So welcome to episode 25.
25. I can't even believe it.
I know. It's wild. And we're very excited because, well, when the episode airs the following day, for all you Swifties, Tortured Poets Department will be out. I have a lot of plans. I have like the whole weekend planned out because it also is the day before Record Store Day. So there's just a lot musically going on the whole weekend. So I'm very excited. I'm going to a Swiftie dance party that I like bought a ticket for.
What does that entail?
I think you go and they play maybe like all of her music videos or something goes on. There's like a visual component and then you dance around and sing your face off.
Will there be Taylor Swift themed cocktails at this dance
event? Great question. I don't actually know the age requirement. I think it's 18 plus. So I don't know the answer to that.
Well, report back to me on the drinks.
It's been kind of a busy week. I don't even know what I've done. Somebody else should go. I have to think about what I did this week. I just feel tired. That's all I know.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to begin since I'm fresh off a plane. I was just in Charleston, South Carolina. I was visiting my cousin Martha. Shout out Martha, who listens every Thursday when this episode drops. I just learned while we were together that she listens immediately. So thank you for that. If you haven't been to Charleston before, it is an amazing food city, which was the primary reason that I was amped to go again. I went for the first time 2 years ago. I was there for a week. We were there for my mom's 70th. This was a bit quicker, just a Friday to a Sunday, but I did get to go to the Obstinate Daughter, which is like on every top 10 list of Charleston restaurants. It's on Sullivan's Island. I had what I would say is maybe the best pasta with vodka sauce I've ever had, which as a vegetarian, I've eaten quite a lot of pasta dishes. I also, of course, had biscuits and went to my favorite ice cream place there, Jenny's. And we did the home and garden tour, which here in Boston, I used to do the South End garden tour every year. I covered it on my blog for years. It was cool to do it in another city, to see like beautiful, elegant, amazing homes and see all the different styles of plants and trees. And my parents definitely move at a slower pace these days in their 70s. So that was a challenge, but otherwise a very good time. Got some shopping in. It was just like a great trip. And it was one of those things where like 3 days actually did feel like a legit vacation.
And I profited off of this because I'm a Southern girl at heart, even though I'm clearly a Northerner. I got gluten-free biscuit mix and grits, which shrimp and grits is one of my like top five favorite meals. So I feel like you should go to South Carolina more often so I can have treats.
I was hoping to bring Stephanie an actual fully cooked gluten-free biscuit, like already made, because I had heard that the famous place there, Callie's Hot Little Biscuit, does GF biscuits. But in fact, the only thing that was available was the mix, not the like finished thing.
Truly, I can't wait to actually, once this house is done, just have a morning where I make fresh biscuits. Like, that's just going to be heaven. God, my voice does it sound really low to you guys, or is that
yes.
Just?
Oh.
Yes.
That's why we have to acknowledge
I just
to the people.
You Phoebe Buffay. I mean, hello.
Yeah, but my ears are also clogged, so I can't tell if I just sound weird to myself. I have nothing to report except that the house is still not done and I'm basically just dying.
Can you explain to the people about...
She does have a head cold, people.
Okay, please explain to our beloved listeners what the situation is with the toilets and the porta potty, because sure. I feel the women listening to this show need to understand.
And we would be happy to provide full names of, if you need to message us and find out who it is that you should probably not hire, we would be happy to provide that information.
So our plumber, I think this was 3 weeks ago, I was texting him because he doesn't always respond to my dad because my dad will just call him out on his BS. So I texted him and I said, we are planning to list on such and such date, which has actually passed at this point, but that's neither here nor there. He said, I'm busy this week. I will pencil you in for April 1st. I said, great. I'm going to hold you to that. He was probably going to do the first and the second. And then my dad, being like, he has to do it, so there's no canceling, went and had our porta potty requisitioned. So they came and pick it up, but I didn't know that. So I went to go to the bathroom and there was no bathroom because our plumber did not, in fact, come last week. He still has not come this week. He claims to be sick, which, fine. You're allowed to take a sick day. You are not allowed to take a sick week and a half when I am working and I am dying. And I don't want to get into like the nitty gritty, but being a woman and having no bathroom. And also my dad just goes, just go outside. And I'm like, that would be doable if there was a spot in the yard that wasn't viewable from a neighbor's house. There's literally no side of the yard or behind the house or next to the house. There is nowhere to pee and not be in view of someone's window. So I have taken the past week and a half to telling people to stay where they are for 5 minutes. And then I open the front and back door of a vehicle in the driveway and go there.
This entire time I have been wondering what you have been doing if you couldn't hold it. And I was like, surely she must be driving to whatever the closest like gas station or
there's a Dunk's that's like 8 minutes maybe away. The problem is that I just get to the point where I like cannot hold it. Like I just push it too far and then I'm like, well, shoot, now I can't drive there. I'm not gonna make it.
Is it grotesque of me that I'm like, why don't you just pee in the bathtub?
Oh,
well, there's no plumbing yet, so she can't.
No,
walk.
There is plumbing.
Oh, there is.
I could have gone in the tub.
To the future buyers of this house that I just suggested that.
It's like a beautiful, pure white tub. Like, I couldn't do that.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah.
No.
Leave that for them to christen.
But I just want people to know. So we are going to go. Caitlin and I are going to go to see the finished product. We're going to take a ton of photos and videos. We're going to share it all with you. You'll see the finished product. I just want you, when you see how gorgeous this house is at the end, to realize that Stephanie worked on this house for probably 2 weeks by the time this is all said and done without anywhere to go to the bathroom. Like, this is what is happening.
This isn't the first house that this has happened either. My men just do not think about the fact that, like, maybe it's not easy to just, like, go to the bathroom outside. I think this is the third house, actually, that hasn't had a bathroom. Anyways, you know.
That's the phase. We've been in many different phases of the renovation that you all have been listening to as Stephanie has been giving updates. We have reached the no bathroom stage of the renovation.
Well, I have not been suffering as much as Steph, and I also did not go on vacation like Molly. I have been house hunting, and I spent Friday and Saturday last weekend. I saw 5 different houses. 3 of them are already under contract. Not a single one of them was interesting to me, really. It's just like kind of a, like the spring market's a joke. The Massachusetts house market right now is a joke. Everything is really overpriced. I'm taking my sweet time because I can, and I'm in a month-to-month lease situation, so I'm not freaking out. But I now understand why other people have been freaking out in the last few years. And it's just like time consuming and you're like driving around. Like I didn't even get to one of the houses I wanted to go to because they all have them on the same at the same time. And it's like a 90-minute window that you can do it. And so I just was like running around doing that. But then on Sunday, I had a Sunday fun day. Went to Wusong Road for the first time in Harvard Square. It's a tiki bar with like unbelievable drinks and Asian food. I had a couple people like post on Instagram in the last year or two, like they had their birthday dinners there and it looked, the decor looked really cool. And then I took a class in Harvard Square, like in the dead of winter, like January and February, and I walked past it and I was like, this does look really cool.
What is it next to?
It's like in a random building in between parking garages off of JFK. It's not in the same building as anything else. Okay. It's like on its own and you kind of have to know it's there. It's two floors. The drinks have, they have like a little Wusong character that they've created, and like similar to like when a spicy dish has like the fire signs underneath, that's how they rate their drink. So like if it's five Wusongs, like probably just get one of those kind of thing, which is really fun. The food was unbelievable. Like, I know you guys aren't meat eaters, but like the dumplings had like maple pork in them, and like we got this really good lo mein that was gluten-free because we had a gluten-free person. And it was like, my friend was like, this is the wettest lo mein I've ever had, but it was like in like a more of a sauce as opposed to like a regular lo mein.
Oh, what kind of noodle? Was it like a rice noodle?
It was like a wide, it looked like linguine basically.
Oh.
Yeah, it was really good. And that dish was veg also. They have all sorts of different buns, and all of the buns come and they look like animals. Like the buns, like the top of the buns, like one was like a chick and one was a pig, and it was so cute. And they have real crab, like crab rangoon, like really like good ones. But then they also had a corn and cheese rangoon, and I almost liked that better. It was really good. I'm definitely going back. We can definitely go.
I can't wait.
I will say though, I kind of did this as like a belated birthday thing for my friend Margaret, and like her birthday was almost 2 weeks ago and we had to go on a Sunday because when I looked like in mid-March, all of the Fridays and Saturdays were already gone for all of April. I was like, okay. So that's why we went at like 2:30 on a Sunday, because like that's when we could go.
But I kind of like Sunday afternoon day drinking, you know?
We had a really fun time. I would like to see what it's like at night, because I bet it gets like, because they didn't have both floors open. They only had one floor open, and I bet it gets like really fun. And I don't know. I feel like it would have good vibes. The decor was awesome. Every drink has a different mug that it comes in. Some of the mugs you can buy. Like I got a Mai Tai and it came in a mug that looked like a Chinese takeout box with a handle on it. It was really fun.
It sounds like I would be obsessed with this place just from like the branding of it all.
Mm-hmm. It's super fun. And they have collected tiki cups from other tiki bars across the country and put them like on a shadow box display case when you walk in. And my friend Ryan was like, oh, my bachelor party was in Chicago and I've been to that tiki bar. And like, it was like in the display. It was really cool.
Before we get into our book topic for the day, we just, before we got on these microphones, unboxed a very special delivery that arrived a few days ago. A few episodes ago, I shared my current obsession with Miss Peaches, the rescue dog of Dave Portnoy, the creator of Barstool Sports. And I mentioned, I think, on that episode that they were at like 800,000 followers on Instagram, and then I was positive that they would cross a million in short order. So sure enough, they have hit a million followers. And we now are the proud owners, between the three of us, of two sweatshirts and a hat, with every penny of that money going towards dog rescues. And he has made so many generous gifts to rescues all over the country, $10,000, $25,000. So I will share a picture on our Instagram of the stuff that we got in case anybody wants to pick out some for themselves. We'll share the link. No like kickback to us, just because it's a cool thing to do. So if you're into animal rescue, you can see the cute stuff that we will soon be sporting.
So we're doing a YA book this week. this, so kind of a funny, like, roundabout way that we all ended up reading this. Steph read it years ago, gave it to me. It was like in my TBR pile for like a million years. And I was like, I don't think I'm ever going to get to this. Gave it back to her. And then we had the book fair at my school, and a bunch of my students were like, oh my God, have you read this book? And it was A Good Girl's Guide to Murder. And I was like, no, I haven't read it, but I really feel like maybe I should revisit it and read it because my friend said it was good. And it's also going to be a TV show. And the lead actress in it is Wednesday's bestie from Wednesday. I can't think of her name. The blonde werewolf girl. She is the best. So she's my favorite character in the show, actually. So I was like, you know, my student said it's good. This girl that I like is going to be in the show. I was like, I should just give it a go. And so I brought it on vacation with me to Florida right around my birthday. And I read like 30 or so pages and I was like, okay, I'm like sort of intrigued. And then I like took it to the pool and read like another 30 or 40 pages. And I was like, okay. And then like halfway through, I was like, I have to know what actually happened, because the premise is very interesting and I feel like very like possible, honestly. Like, it's told from the perspective of a high school girl doing her senior capstone project, and she gets a head start on it before school starts. So it's about this really precocious girl, and she has basically decided to investigate a murder and suicide situation. I don't want to like give too much away, but essentially this girl goes missing and she's gone for so long that she's presumed dead. And then her boyfriend commits suicide in the, well, it looks like suicide in the woods, and leaves kind of an ominous note that makes it seem like he did something to his girlfriend. And Pip, the main character, like does not accept it because she knew the boy in her past, like as a child, she knew him. And so she decides to take on this case and kind of be this like Harriet the Spy girl detective, because she feels like she knows the people well enough that they'll actually talk to her. I really enjoyed it. The only hump that I had to get over was that the writing is a little clunky, but it's all from the point of view of a high school girl who is like submitting this as a project, and these are like her project notes. So once I like reminded myself of that a couple of times, I was like, okay, this is good storytelling, even if it's like a little not that polished.
See, and I think that's why I liked it, is because one, it kept me on my toes because it kept changing from like not scribbled, but like notes, or my brain's not working, but when she took recorded conversations and
transcribed.
Thank you. I love those because you have to sort of imagine what's happening in between what's actually being said. So it could be like so many different things. I think it made the story more interesting. I think if it was just told from like a narration standpoint, it wouldn't have had the catch that it seemed to have. Yes, it is a YA book, and so maybe it's not as polished, maybe, or written so that the reader comes up to the writing. But I wish that this book had been out when I was a teen, because I feel like I would have loved this, and there was nothing like this back then.
I feel like the only thing that's even remotely similar in my brain, and we've actually talked about both, well, I've talked about both of these authors, Caroline B. Cooney, who wrote Face on the Milk Carton and all those books. And then Lois Duncan, who wrote I Know What You Did Last Summer. She wrote a bunch of other mysteries too that are basically like tween category, I guess I would call it. Molly, you're the last one that read it. What did you think?
So I had not heard of this book or this author until we decided to cover it for the pod. And at first, I found it a little bit slow. And I think part of that could be that I had just read a few books prior to this that I like loved and had raced through. And so it was like a rough transition, as often happens for me when I step outside the romance genre again. I did like the project notes and the transcription from the interviews. I think the thing that was most interesting to me is when she decides to kind of reopen this case, her unlikely ally turns out to be the brother of this person, Sal, who they think took his own life. And I was very like, how is she going to earn his trust? His family's already been so like traumatized. I don't know if this is going to work out. And then their sort of co-conspirator relationship throughout the book was actually the thing that kept me going. And I felt like seeing how things, you know, just like evolved for them both in their personal relationship, but how much each of them was willing to pour into trying to solve this. It was like the stakes got higher and higher, and also their trust in each other got higher and higher. I'm not as good at predicting the endings of things as the two of you are, but I will say that I did not see the ending of this coming at all, which I liked. I felt like as it was unfolding in that final like 25% of the book, let's say, I honestly had no idea what was going to happen. And I felt myself like leaning forward. I was reading it on the couch, like just wondering what the resolution was going to be. And I felt like even though you may find it slow at the beginning, anyone who decides to pick this up, you really should stick with it because the pace increases significantly as it goes on. And then the big reveals at the end, I felt like were really worth it. Like that the payoff at the end was a big one. And, you know, not that everything was like tied up with a bow, but I felt like you did get answers to certain things. And also people who seemed like benign and unimportant to the story sort of emerged in a new light towards the end. So I think people should try it and just know that you got to like see it through.
I also was just thinking that I think it had to be a YA book because only a teenager would like catfish a person to try and get answers and like have no qualms whatsoever putting themselves in harm's way to get to the answers. Or maybe that's just me being an anxious person, but like I don't see an adult doing this.
Pip takes some seriously big risks, and it's so interesting because as she gets closer to Sal's brother, she realizes like this isn't really about the project anymore. This is about like clearing his name and like, or at least getting the brother some definitive answers. Because the brother, his like, you know, warrior cry the whole time is that my brother wasn't like this. He would never do anything this selfish. And that's kind of how Pip feels too. And so they kind of have this like common understanding of like, okay, we both still think of him as the person that we knew him to be. And neither one of us has let like his death taint that. And like, let's work together to figure it out. And so the stakes keep getting higher and she keeps taking like bigger risks that have consequences that reach way beyond her. And there's definitely some parts that like are a little like, I wouldn't say scary, but like you're kind of holding your breath. Like, ooh, this might've been a really bad situation she got herself into. But then you understand, like, she just gets this drive of, like, I have to figure this out. Like, we've come way too far to only go this far. I did predict one thing. Like, there was one person that I found sus from the start. And that ended up being a worthwhile investigation as a reader for me. When I was reading it, I started thinking about the case slash show. And I don't know if
what again is that what you're gonna say?
No.
Oh.
I was gonna say The Girl from Plainville. Did anybody watch that? Did you watch it, Mo?
I didn't, but you can spoil anything you need to.
Okay. Well, it's based on a real case that happened in Plainville, Massachusetts. So basically it was the case where the girl bullied her boyfriend via text message into killing himself.
Oh, yes. Okay. Yes.
And she was convicted and it was a really big deal because it was like, okay, this is like the first big cyberbullying case where the person has been found guilty. Because there have been other instances of, unfortunately, teenagers killing themselves because they were egged on by classmates on the internet. And so they made a TV show out of it, and Elle Fanning is absolutely outstanding in it. She is like, she should have won some stuff, in my opinion. But
kind of the tone of it and like seeing how the families are impacted and how it like kind of like takes over the town and people make a lot of assumptions. And the girl that has been missing perpetually, she, you find out a lot of things about her that like you wouldn't know on surface level. And I really feel like I only knew the surface level of that texting case. And then I watched the show and I was like, I see how it escalated now. And when I was reading Good Girl's Guide to Murder, I was like, okay, this is the escalate. Like, teenagers are passionate and they don't have bills and they don't have jobs and they just are supposed to go to school and do their homework. And Pip has a car. Or no, maybe she doesn't have a car, but the brother does. And
you have obsessive tendencies at that age.
Yeah. I mean, other girls her age are like Harry Styles and she's like, I'm going to investigate a murder. Like, it happens. I do know kids like this that just get really passionate about something. And you do have, if you manage your time well and you don't do a ton of extracurriculars, like you really do end up having a lot of free time in your day. Like the school day ends at like 2:05. Imagine your day ending at 2:05 and you're like, I just got the rest of the day to do whatever I want now.
Mine does, actually.
Okay. Well, it must be nice. But so if you liked Girl from Plainville, if you like that like kind of passionate, unnerving teenager stuff.
You know what? I forgot about this series. I think you only read the first one, but I have both of them. Kathleen Hale's No One Else Can Have You. Do you remember? Kippy Bushman is investigating her best friend's murder.
Yes.
In small town Minnesota. Loved that book. Fantastic. Similar, like precocious teenage girl trying to suss out who is actually at fault here.
There's a second book. I bought it. I haven't started it yet. And essentially, Pip and the brother, whose name we should have maybe looked up.
Ravi.
Okay. So I think I said Ravi in my head the whole time I read it.
Either way.
Okay. Ravi. He and Pip get approached to turn their investigation into a podcast. And I guess while that's happening, another case, somebody approaches them and is like, I need your help. And that's what the second book is about. And then Holly Jackson just came out with another book last week or the first week of April. And that follows a whole different, I think, girl detective again. And it seems like another similar, like this happened in my town and I'm going to get to the bottom of it kind of thing. And so I'm into it. I'm very into it. But again, I love a female detective. Mayor of Easttown, beautiful, loved it. I loved the latest season of True Detective. Jodie Foster was amazing, as was her counterpart whose name I can't think of. Oh my gosh. Callie.
From Rhode Island?
She's from Rhode Island. anyways, I just love girl detectives. So the idea of what these girls were like, these women were like as teenagers is kind of fun to play around with. And I could see why authors are like, ooh, a precocious teen detective? Like, this could be fun. You know, like, it is kind of fun. And I think some of us also, like when I was in high school, like anytime anything like even a little dramatic happened, it was like, oh, well, like who's going to get to the bottom of this? Like the rumor mill would just start swirling and you'd be like, did you hear from so-and-so? It's like every teen movie you've ever seen. You get to the cafeteria and all of a sudden the whispers are like happening galore. That really happened at my high school. And I just feel like it's fun to see when there's a good payoff for that. So if you like mysteries and you like, or you're willing to tango with young adult literature, I thought it was fun. I thought it was an interesting read. There were a lot of twists. I only figured one of them out. I feel like that's pretty good for a YA book. Usually I kind of have pieced it together like halfway through. That did not happen with this book. So I thought it was a good one.
I'm excited to see it. Is it a movie or a show?
Do we know? I actually don't know. I will look it up.
I think it'll be fun to watch. And I also hope there's a murder board because it's on the cover.
Well, the cover has the red string, right, which Styles Stilinski, a nice little hat tip to him.
Yeah, I'm not as big a true crime junkie as the two of you, but I will say in reading this, which happens to me anytime I read these kinds of stories, I just become so disillusioned with the justice system in a way where, like, I can't stop thinking about it. Like, for days after I finished reading this, I was like, good God, I hope I never go missing or turn up, like, murdered in a random place because no one will do the right thing and, like, search until they find the truth.
Yeah, and I think to myself, my sister will be the person who figures out who killed
me.
Yeah,
girl detective. Yeah, exactly. But I feel like when I read it, truly, for many days after, I was like, it just, and I think, you know, I have watched a few of, like, the documentaries or, like, docu-series that you guys have turned me on to about, like, real life crimes that were later on solved or, like, reopened and whatnot. And you can't help but just be like, if it isn't for that one squeaky wheel person, like, so-and-so just would have gotten away with this.
If the casting of this is this is definitely correct. So they've already started filming it. It's the BBC that's putting it together as a series. Because Holly Jackson is not American, by the way.
Now I feel like an idiot. Did it take place in the U.S.?
It took place in the U.S.
Oh.
In Connecticut.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I just always assume that everything takes place in the U.S.
Okay. So, Mal, I'm definitely going to send you some photos that I just found from the guy that's playing Ravi Ravi.
Oh, great.
Very good looking person. First of all, and second of all, it's from the set that he's posted these, so it's kind of fun. Yeah, and you get to see Pip, and it's fun.
Cool. I'm excited about that. So I'll tell you, in my head, I wasn't picturing, like, certain people for every single person, but Andy, the girl who goes missing, I was picturing as Sydney Sweeney from Euphoria.
Oh, yeah.
And then for Sal, RIP Sal, I was picturing the actor who plays Davy's Indian boyfriend in Never Have I Ever.
Oh, yeah.
Who's on the, like, competing rival debate team.
I can see it.
Anyway, Caitlin will show me who's actually playing these people. But, I bet it will be great as a on-screen story.
Little Ravi Ravi.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah,
cute.
He's a cutie. No idea. His name is... Well, his first name is Zane. I don't know what his last name is because I don't think that this handle is actually his last name.
We'll share some visuals for those who might be interested in the film version.
Emma Myers is the girl that's playing Pip. That was going to drive me cuckoo bananas. Her name is Emma Myers. What's everybody reading?
I am reading a Reese's Book Club book that a college friend of mine had posted on Goodreads months ago, and I trust him inherently, so I went out and purchased the hardcover. I don't know what has come over me recently. It is called Did You Hear About Kitty Carr? It's by Crystal Smith Paul. I have no idea if this is optioned. I hope it is, because I think it would be beautiful. So it's a story in two parts. The quote-unquote present day is 2017, and it's in Hollywood, and there is this family that is apprised of an actress and a musician producer, and they have three adult daughters who are in their, like, late 20s, early 30s, and all three girls have come home to their, like, family mega mansion in the Hollywood Hills because their next-door neighbor, Kitty Carr, who was sort of like a...
You keep saying that, and I keep hearing Katie Carr, which is a person that I know. It's a guy that I went to high school with. His mom's name is that. And I keep, and she, like, they live right by our school, so, like, she would be around on her bike and stuff all the time. And I'm like, every time you say that, I'm like, wait a minute, what?
Meanwhile, Richard Scarry style, I'm picturing, like, a tiny car being driven by a kitty cat.
She's the worm in the apple cart.
No, she's sort of like a Elizabeth Taylor type person. Like, she was, like, a starlet in her heyday, and then she became sort of like an eccentric woman who lived next door to them, has, like, a labyrinth garden in the backyard. Anyways, she has just passed and left her $600 million estate to the three young women, and everyone is sort of, like, asking questions. Like, Variety wants to have an interview with one of the daughters to, like, suss out why the three of them ended up with the fortunes because they're not related. They're just neighbors. And then in the past, we go back to 1930s, and I think we're in North Carolina. And this girl, Hazel, her entire family, she's grown up as a sharecropper family. They all die in a boat drowning. She gets taken in by this young woman who works for this wealthy white family. And so she starts working at the house as well. And she gets earmuffs for any children that might be listening to this. She gets raped by their son and has the child. And the child, she realizes quickly, can pass as white. So on the weekends, they head to Winston-Salem?
North Carolina.
Yes, which is like a 2-hour bus ride from where they are. And they go like into the department store, and she pretends to be her like nanny instead of her actual mother. So the girl can like try on dresses in the whites only department store and whatever. And so I have my suspicions of how this is going to all kind of come together, but I almost don't care at this point because both stories are so different. The like present day stuff is like jarring because it's like paparazzi is following them to the gym, and like the mother clearly has like an eating disorder and is stressed about her Halloween themed party that is going to coincide with the funeral. It's like very like at odds with each other, but they're both beautiful stories in their own right. And so I mean, it's like a thick book and I'm only quarter way into it. I'm loving it. I understand why it's on Reese's book club. So I will pass it along. Maybe we'll do an episode. Who knows? We'll see if you guys like it too.
I can go next. I am reading a book called On Basketball and Ascension. Neither of these two fine women are going to read this book, I think. It's by Hanif. I don't know how to say Hanif's last name. I think it's Adrab Keeb. I butchered that. I'm so sorry, Hanif. But anyways, Hanif, I don't know how to explain him. He's from Columbus.
Sorry, is this memoir? Like what?
I don't know. It's a collection of essays.
Okay.
He does these books. This is like his third or fourth book that I've read. He does books where he provides like social commentary and commentary from his perspective of being a Black Muslim man in the United States. He's from Columbus. He's always lived in Columbus. He's a MacArthur genius. He didn't go to college. His mom passed away when he's a teenager. He's one of five kids, I think. And he just has really interesting things to say. Like, people kind of have joked around and been like, he's the Black Chuck Klosterman. But, like, no. That's cheapening it, I think. He has one book that's called They Can't Kill Us Until They Kill Us. And it's basically, like, him interspersing, like, ideas about life and his experiences with, like, music criticism. This one's about, like, coming of age, but he also uses basketball as, like, a metaphor throughout it. He has another one that was literally every single essay was about A Tribe Called Quest. He has another one that got nominated for... I think it might have been a finalist for the Pulitzer, but it was a finalist for the National Book Award and a couple of other ones, and it was all about Black performance, like, through history. So he just, like, he has a really interesting perspective. He knows a ton about music. He's a great follow on social media. He is just, there's nobody else out there writing like him. He's just really interesting. The first chapter of this book, he talks about, it ends up being about like haircuts and identity and first love, but he starts off by talking about in the 90s, there was this group of five freshman starters for the University of Michigan's basketball team, and they were like Jalen Rose was one of them, and like they all came in together and like had completely like bald heads, and it was like a power move of like, we don't even need hair, like we're studs, like whatever. And then that like kind of like resonates throughout the whole essay about like hair and the importance of hair and whether or not you need it. What does it say if you don't have it? it's just really interesting. And then it turns into like he's dating this girl and both of them have lost their mom. So then like wigs come into play. Like he takes a topic and just like weaves it. It's unbelievable. Anyways, that's what I'm reading.
From highbrow to lowbrow. I just finished this book that Steph loaned to me called Done and Dusted,
which Caitlin forced me to buy.
Oh, yes, on one of your many bookstore outings. Done and Dusted is by Lila Sage. It's a fiction book. It's about a woman who is a barrel racer, gets thrown from a horse, has a very traumatic experience, and comes home to her family's ranch in Montana to kind of recoup and try to, like...
Wyoming.
Oh, I'm sorry. Wyoming. How dare I make that mistake? It's called Meadowlark, which is, I think, where the M came in my head. So she comes home to Wyoming to kind of, like, get her bearings again. And a surprise to no one, she falls in love.
Wait, can I just interject that this has bothered me since I read it? How did no one in her family end up as an emergency contact when she was, like, knocked sideways off the horse? Did that bother you at all?
There are holes in this story, for sure. And also, she's, like, number one ranked in her, like, age group, her demographic, whatever. And no one is concerned that she just, like, abandoned the tour. And, like, there are a lot of holes. So she comes home and winds up really falling for her older brother's best friend. They have, like, you know, an antagonistic history from childhood. But their romance was very, very fun to follow. And I had read, like, I don't know, 30 pages maybe before I got on the plane to Charleston. And then I read the entire rest of the book on this hour and 55 minute flight. I really loved it. Like, is it the best writing of all time? It is not. But it was very, very fun. And I was picturing certain people in my head.
Do tell.
As both. Her name's Clementine, but she goes by Emmy. Emmy and Luke. And so I had these like visuals in my head, and I was picturing Luke as Glenn Powell from Top Gun and from Anyone But You and a million other movies that he's recently been in. But then I read this Q&A with the author at the very end, and I need to share this with you. I know you can always count on me to read whatever's in the back of the book. So the person asking the Q&A, which I assume is like the publisher, said, "You say you drew inspiration for Luke from Friday Night Lights. Did you have any other inspirations when creating the characters in Done and Dusted?" And she says, "I always joke that Luke is Tim Riggins if he grew up, washed his hair, and got a savings account." And I was like, okay, well, now I have a different visual. Also in the Q&A, they asked her which authors she admires or like what stories really moved her. And you guys are going to die because these are like our favorites. So she says, "Some of my favorite books are Love is a Mixtape by Rob Sheffield. Ninth House."
Love that book.
Me too. Ninth House by Leigh Bardugo.
I also love that book.
Eldest by Christopher Paolini. Getaway Girl by Tessa Bailey, Writers and Lovers by Lily King, and of course, Beach Read by Emily Henry. But more recently, I've fallen in love with Helen Huang, Ashley Poston, Riley Sager, and Abby Jimenez. To me, these authors are absolute masters of their craft, and I can't wait to read everything they write for the rest of forever.
So I read that Lily King book. I don't even know if I finished it, to be honest with you.
Oh,
the,
I did.
The Writers and Lovers.
I loved it. It was based in Harvard Square.
I didn't get into it. I don't know.
Okay, but the fact that she was like, "I've become obsessed with Helen Huang," which I just spoke about that at length. Ashley Poston, author of 7 Year Slip. Riley Sager, which you guys just finished one of those. I mean, this is like our reading list.
When I read that book, first of all, I loved it. It's not perfect, and that's okay. But also, I can just tell how much she loves Wyoming. And I immediately was like, I want to be friends with her. I think we could be on so many levels. I'm forgetting. It got optioned, correct?
It did get optioned.
But I can't remember if it's movie or TV.
We'll fact check it and share it with the people.
And there's currently 2 books out. The 3rd is coming out soon. And she has a 4th one coming out at some point. And she is just like popping these out.
Yeah. And she's,
well, I think she just needed somebody to say yes, and she had a backlog, yeah, you know?
Probably.
Yes, she's under 30, which is like, what? But also, I need to share. I said this to Steph in a text. I was recently telling my friend Emily Wheaton Friend, shout out to Emily, that I was reading this book. And I was like, I just finished a great book. I think you would love it. It's called Done and Dusted, to which she said, is that about cleaning?
No, it's not.
I said, nope, that is about being thrown off of a horse. It's not about cleaning. It's not an Amelia Bedelia book. So if you're interested in Wyoming or the West or cowboy romances, also this is very small towny. So like if you like a Gilmore Girls type vibe, it does also have that kind of same energy. And there's all kinds of people in the town who have been there forever and ever. And, you know, they all support each other. And I'd like to tell you that I'm not going to read all the rest of them, but I probably am.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably buy the second and third ones for our trip.
We already tried to buy the second one and they didn't have it.
That's true.
Remember? I think it's called Swift and Saddled, the next
one. That is correct.
I also just love they're all like alliterative, which I just think makes it more fun.
Also, the covers are awesome. They're so campy and like they remind me of like old Westerns, but like they kind of look like the funnies from a newspaper.
Yeah, they're very like frameable.
And also, once you know all the characters, it's those characters that are going to be in the next books because it's all, you know.
Yes, which is great.
Oh, that makes sense that she likes Helen Hong then.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. And in the acknowledgements, I think that she did already know that the next one was going to be coming out because she says, you know, and I'm so grateful that I'm going to get the chance to tell the story of, you know, so-and-so and so-and-so. So I think each one of the next installments follows a different sibling in the family. Yeah.
I also just really love that like her origin story is that she self-published that book and then got traditionally published because it did so well, which just like gives the layman hope.
Absolutely.
You know? Do we know it's not a trope, but like do we know what it's called when an author makes a series out of the side characters from the first book? Is that called something?
I'm sure someone's going to turn.
Because it also reminds me of the motorcycle books that I made you read.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Which I can't think of the name of right now.
Hold on.
It's also, for those who have read the Jasmine Guillory books, there's always crossover of the characters from the previous installment, even if they're just, you know.
Well, Tia Williams did it, too.
Yes, Tia Williams also included from the character from 70s in June, reappeared in Love Song for Ricky Wilde. If you all want to follow what we're reading, what we're excited about, an incredible amount of hilarious memes and reels, please follow us on Instagram.
I also just want to say thank you for sticking through this whole episode when I sound like this.
Yes, you won't be able to hear the sound of Stephanie on Instagram because we don't really do that, but give a follow at Plans Are Booked. You can also shoot us a note to plansarebooked@gmail.com. We love to hear from you. We want to know what you're reading, what you think we should be reading, any ideas for upcoming episode topics. We are delighted to hear your thoughts.
And until next time, our plans are booked.